From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made one day every year. One day in May, in which property owners can appeal their assessments. Those who have tried say that they've got to squeeze their argument into roughly 15 minutes, and it's their only chance to get a fairer tax bill. After all, if your assessment is off by $10,000, it can cost you $300 a year. And the most famous or perhaps infamous local assessment in recent memory involves a property on Canandaigua Lake. And yes, a few hundred geese. You've probably seen the story. Paychex founder Tom Golisano is challenging his tax assessment for his property in South Bristol. With a 2,900-square-foot home, 850 feet of lake frontage, he pays $132,000 a year in taxes on the place, but he says the property is really unusable because of the prodigious amount of waste from geese. This hour, though, is not a conversation about geese or what they produce. It's about the tax assessment system in general, and one man's view of what should be done about it. Tom Golisano has challenged assessments in the past, but he wanted to join us on Connections today to make the case that it's time for a much broader challenge. Again, not just about his places, but it's about all of us. And he's back here in studio on Connections. Tom, welcome back. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
You want to talk geese for the entire hour?
No, I don't want to talk about geese, but can you imagine trying to invite your grandchildren and friends over to your house and they can't even walk on the lawn on the lake property? I mean, 100 to 200 geese, even my wife was scared because they're pretty fierce animals. But the biggest problem is they are just messy as heck. They drop feathers all over the place and, of course, the geese droppings. I have a landscape crew that works for me. It takes them about 4 hours just to clean off the property on any given day. But the problem is they're back the next day or the day after. They're not very predictable. And 100 to 200 geese is a very big problem.
All right, so I want to tell our listeners, we're going to get this whole geese stuff out of the way, out of the gate. And I know some of our listeners wanted to ask about it, and that's fine. You want to join the conversation, you can. But we are going to be talking about a much broader issue of tax assessments. I will do my due diligence and ask you this. I've got leaves on my lawn. I've got to remove those leaves on my own. You've got geese dropping on yours. What's the difference?
Well, first of all, you can walk on your leaves. You can't walk on my lawn.
Well, you can. Wouldn't be very pleasant.
It doesn't do your feet any harm or do your dogs any dirty because they roll in it or bring it in the house. And your leaves are only once, maybe twice a year that it's an issue. But geese are all summer long. And this particular year, 2017, has been the worst I've ever seen. I mean, last year, the year before, they'd come in flocks maybe of 10, 15, or 20, which is no big deal. Like, we can tolerate that. We can walk around it. But when there's 100 to 200 geese at any given time, it's a whole different story.
Couldn't you hire somebody to be there every day on guard to fend them off?
I could do that. I'd have to pay for it. But the biggest issue with that is you don't know what day the geese are going to come. So you would have to almost pay somebody every day to come out there with maybe a border collie or some sort of dog that could shoo them off. It's an expensive proposition. And with me paying $132,000 in real estate taxes, it seems like it's a little unfair that I would have to do that. The other issue, you know, there are ways, suggestions anyway, we haven't found any of them to be very reliable, to move the geese. But the problem is, if they're not on my property, they're on my neighbor's property. And they're going to have the problem. So we're not really attacking the issue by just shooing them off my property. We need to shoo them off the lake somehow.
All right, so the geese are one thing, but tax assessments are another. And Tom Golisano has challenged in the past, and pretty successfully, I think.
Well, let me review that.
Okay.
I have a home in Mendon.
Yeah.
It was initially assessed at $6 million. There had never been a transaction in Monroe County for over $2 million. So the likelihood of anybody buying it for any price in that range was ridiculous. I took it to court twice. I had to go to court twice. The first time they lowered the assessment to 2.9. The second time they lowered it to 1.9. Now the taxes on $6 million assessment are $200,000 a year. On 1.9, it's a more reasonable number, $60,000 a year. But it cost me over $200,000 to fight that in legal fees. And they are not reimbursable. I mean, as wrong as that assessor was, and as damaging as he was and expensive as he was, I have no form of reimbursement. I have just to eat the cost.
You're going to get less sympathy from our listeners if they think it's all about you and your bills. But one of the things Tom and I talked about earlier this week is, you know, we said if this is just about Tom's properties, I don't know if it's a full conversation, but you say it's time for it to be not just your properties. Yeah. You are thinking about people who can't afford lawyers, yes?
Absolutely. And let me give you a statistics. We've been doing some survey work, which I think people are going to find very interesting. If assessments are supposed to be based on market value, and indeed they are, I mean, that's what the law says, what percentage of the homes that are sold are within 10% of their assessment, either up or down? In other words, the assessment was either higher or lower.
It should be a lot, right? If the assessments are accurate and they're doing it well, we should have it's not going to be 100%, but it should be a majority, right?
The homes we surveyed, it was only 20%. 20% of the homes within 10% of the market value, up or down. That's a system that's disaster. I mean, you think about every other level of taxation we have, how exact it is and calculated. But this idea of an assessor coming in without even going into your house and trying to figure out the value of your home and basing your real estate taxes on it, it's ridiculous. Even the town assessor in South Bristol said to me, the system is flawed. And when you get unique properties, that makes it even worse, because most of the assessment activity is based on comparable homes in the neighborhood. Well, if you have unique properties, I mean, it's very difficult. And they always tend to go high on their assessments. I don't know why.
You don't know why?
Yeah, I do.
You have some ideas on why. What is the South Bristol assessment for that property for you, Tom?
It's over $5 million.
Could you get $5 million if you had to sell it?
If I am willing to sell it in pieces, yes. If I would try to sell it as a unit, there's actually three lots. They total 800 feet of frontage. And the house that I have is a very modest house. It's actually an old cottage. It's about 2,900 square feet, 10 by 10 kitchen, and that very low ceilings. And it's 2,900 square feet. You know, to say it's worth, that property's worth over $5 million is really a stretch.
But now, the money is for the lake frontage, right? 850 feet of lake frontage.
Yeah, the way they assess property on the lake is they take the linear feet of frontage and they multiply it by the last two or three sales on the lake. And they do it quite often. You know, they do the updates. Well, if it was all one piece of property, which I've been trying to get the assessor to deal with, I don't think it would be worth as much as it is as three separate properties. But the fact of the matter is, $132,000 for a lake house that I use 8 weekends. I mean, maybe I should just sell it. I mean, that's one of those.
That's your choice. They don't care how many weekends you use it. That's your property, right?
Correct.
That's not their fault that you're only using it 8 weekends a year, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's correct. But the issue is, I have this geese problem. And so how could the property be worth $5 million?
So how is an assessment done? For people who are, you know, kind of just don't really pay attention to that, how is the assessment done?
Well, the assessor usually goes out and visits the property visually from the outside. And they have measurements on square footage. Those are two of the basic ingredients. Obviously, comparables in the neighborhood that have had sales transactions. And they come up with a number. They tell you what the number is before May, and if you want to challenge that assessment, you have to do it during the month of May. I think they only schedule it 1 or 2 days in the month, so you have to be in town on those days. And you go in and you make a presentation. Usually it involves comparables in the neighborhood that you've researched, and then they make a judgment right there. If they don't make the judgment in your favor or what you think is appropriate, you either find a lawyer and go to court, or you walk away and that's it.
You have to deal with it, right? And so that one day in May that people get, if they want a challenge, as you said, it's sort of a pressure-filled window for them to have to make that case. Is that right?
Yes, and generally they're not professionals at making presentations to town boards. So it's a nervous event for them. They probably have never done it before, and it's just a tough deal. And I don't know what percentage of them actually get changed because of a presentation. I know some do, but I would imagine a lot of them aren't.
And you have, what, 10, 15 minutes, as you said?
10 to 15 minutes to make your presentation.
On one day out of the year. So in a minute, we're going to ask Tom what he's going to ask lawmakers to do to change all of this. But let me ask you a question that I know has come up since this story broke last month about your property on Canandaigua Lake, which is this. There's no way to question objectively the fact that you're one of the most generous people who has ever lived in this community, and yet you're still saying to the Naples School District, I'm not giving you that $90,000. And they may need that money. Why not give them that money and say, I don't like it, you can have it for now, but I'm going to change this system?
Well, I've sort of took that approach a few years ago, and it certainly didn't get the kick that this approach today. I mean, I have the checks right here if you want to see them. They're all made out. They're certainly covered. They're all signed.
Oh, I think you can cover checks. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. Well, the fact is, in the end, I want to pay my school taxes. But in the end, this system needs to be changed. And I saw this as a vehicle to get attention to the matter. I mean, let me give you some of the information I found out that's just astounding. First of all, why do condominiums get a discount of their assessment of one-third to one-half? I don't understand why that is. I mean, it's market value for their real estate, for their property. Why should they be taxed at a lesser rate? Now, I can speculate why that happened.
I want to hear you speculate. What do you think?
New York City. New York City is all, or so many of the properties are condominiums. And also, New York City has a 4% earned income tax. Okay, so they justify the reduced assessment in New York City on condos because of the income tax. Well, we don't have a local income tax in upstate New York and anywhere in upstate New York. So all these people that have condominium ownership, and, you know, I'm trying not to put them down, but they are getting a real tax break. I don't understand why. Second thing, if you own property as a secondary residence, like my place on Canandaigua Lake, I can't vote. I can't vote in a budget. I mean, here they can assess me, huge amounts of dollars, but I can't even vote on a school budget referendum. And the Naples School District, quite frankly, has had two referendums in the last 3 years, and they've increased their taxes above the 2% limit, which I think is somewhat of a joke. But they've passed referendums, and we've had tax increases now of 10% in the last 3 years in Naples. So that's another thing. This thing about not voting, I want to call the attention to the fact that there was a real patriot in this country many years ago. And he said, taxation without representation is tyranny. And that's what we have with this voting system. Can't vote, but I got to pay all these taxes, and I have no say.
So you should be able to vote in Florida and New York?
Yes. If I'm a property owner and I pay taxes, why not?
Because it's giving you a lot of power as a property owner, and people don't have your wealth, don't have that same opportunity to participate. Your votes end up starting to count more, don't they?
No. It's one vote, no matter how much property value you own.
And you're saying voting on local elections, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, like Naples school budget.
Okay. So he's not saying he gets to cast a vote in two different states for the presidential election. He's talking about voting in local elections where you pay. But are you saying anybody who pays property taxes at all within, say, a school district, for example, should be allowed to vote no matter what that number is?
Why not?
Okay, so so there's an idea. What's the top of the list for you, though? Is it changing the assessment system?
The assessment system needs to be changed. When only 20% of the assessments are within the 10% variance, we have a real problem. I mean, I've got some examples here that are kind of shocking. There was a house sold in Pittsburgh for $390,000. The assessment was $199,000. So a $200,000 difference, that person's saving $8,000 a year, or has been. In Rochester, a house sold for $312,750, and the assessment was $172,000. Again, how far off can this system be? No other taxing system in our in our financial world is this inexact and this inaccurate.
So those are a couple of examples of assessments that are low, though. So this is not just a case where you think people who tend to be wealthier are charged, are asked to pay too much in taxes. There are times where people are not paying enough.
I can't say that's a fact. I could intuitively.
Well, the two examples you just gave me, somebody was getting a pretty good deal.
Yeah, but I don't know how wealthy they are. They may not be very wealthy.
Okay.
So.
Okay. The reason I ask that is because some of our listeners might perceive this as a wealthy guy looking out for wealthy friends who are asked to pay too much. And is that too limited a view of what your effort is?
You bet it's a very limited view. When 80% of the assessments are off by more than 10%, it applies to a lot of people. And now the people that are underassessed are not going to say much. The people that are overassessed have to plead their case. They may not be as qualified as they could be to plead that case, but they're stuck with it.
All right, listeners, I want to hear from you when it comes to, you know, your own assessment. I mean, Tom is saying that all of us, the majority of us, probably are not paying what we should when it comes to assessed value on our property. And that could be paying too little or paying too much. 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. So what's the process? What do you do? I mean, you certainly have relationships with a lot of people in power at the state level, at local levels. So let me start locally. You said in Bristol, for example, the assessor himself told you the system's broken?
She, yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah. She did.
She did. She said it's flawed.
It's flawed.
Yeah. And then she came over to my property and looked at it and said, this place is a mess. I understand your problem, talking about the geese.
But that doesn't mean that the assessment's going to change.
Probably not. For it to change, we would probably have to go through a period where I either plead the case or they voluntarily change it. But I don't know if they're going to be willing to do that based on the geese story, which is obviously a fluctuating problem.
So on the state level, what is the mechanism to start changing this?
Well, let's start with one point that's very key. Everybody has heard that we have the highest real estate taxes in upstate New York in the entire country. Now, if I was a legislator or a governor, I think I'd be really concerned about that. But we've known this for decades, and nobody is doing anything about it. They probably don't have any idea what to do about it, or they're afraid to cut the expenditures down to what would make a difference in our real estate taxes. I mean, I can give you some samples of cities, very comparable cities to Rochester, and what they pay a year. And it's really disturbing. For example, Columbus, Ohio, a city very much like Rochester, New York, if you've ever been there, a $200,000 residence, the taxes there are $3,700. In Rochester, it would be about $7,000. Another, Louisville, Kentucky, $2,500 on a $200,000 home. Memphis, Tennessee, $37,000. Richmond, Virginia, $2,500 on a $200,000. We're double or triple all of these cities that are very much like Rochester. What do our legislators do about it? Nothing. Now, let me go back to the school district because this is a very important point. When I look at the expenditures of the Naples School District, Evan, they don't spend any much more money than their counterparts in their neighborhood. So the big beneficiaries of these high taxes is the state of New York, because the higher the assessments, the lower the state aid to the school district. So it's not like our school district is misbehaving because with these high taxes. It's the state that's driving it.
Are you worried that withholding $90,000 from the Naples district is going to hurt the district and the students there?
With the size of the budget, if it hurts them, it probably won't be for quite a while. And this probably will be resolved.
Before it goes too far?
Before it goes too far.
I'm going to grab a few phone calls. Pat down in Hemlock first on the phone with Tom Golisano. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi. I used to live in Monroe County, and I won't list the name of the town, but there were some problems there that I researched, much as Mr. Golisano has, as far as homes being close to their market value. There's a huge discrepancy. Mr. Golisano is correct. This is also correct when I did the research about condominiums, that they pay a much lower price in taxes. And it's also true what Mr. Golisano was saying as far as property owners being able to get a fair shake and being able to complain about their assessments and get it reduced. It's very difficult to do. And typically most people are unable to get their assessments reduced. It's set up very much against the property owner, which is wrong.
So, Pat, I'll ask you and then Tom the same question then. What should the system to appeal an assessment be, if not what it is now?
The assessor should be able to provide comparables that match the home. For example, my prior home was assessed at a too high of a rate, and they were compared with a home that was built in 1999. And my home was built in 1964, and they were doing it, they were comparing, they didn't take the age into account. How's that? They compared it to a home with larger square footage and didn't take that into account. There were lots of things that they were able to increase. They were able to use comparables in an inappropriate way to increase the value or the assessment of my home.
Okay. Pat, thanks for the phone call. Tom,
yeah, Pat, on? You're very well educated. I like it.
Well, a lot of research, same as you've done, Mr. Galison, but could I make one comment about the geese?
Sure.
I also live in a place where geese come, and I live there because I like the geese. If you go into the animal's habitat, you got to expect them to come. I'm sorry.
Well.
But you're very correct. You're very correct on the assessment.
Pat, thank you for the phone call. Go ahead, Tom.
No, thanks a lot, Pat.
you know, does that line up? Do you think that anybody who really digs in with research, in other words, you feel like you've started to really research what assessments are, how often they're accurate versus not, do you think most people just don't have the time or the inclination to do this and aren't aware of the discrepancies?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Pat is obviously well-educated on the topic, but most people are not. In fact, I think, I don't know if I would pick a number out of the air, probably 90% of the people don't even know how their real estate taxes is calculated. So that's going to be one of our goals, is to educate people about the process. And if it creates more activity at the bargaining table when they meet with the town board officials, I think that's great. The more pressure we put on these towns and these town assessors to do the job right, the better off we are.
So it's one step in Tom Galisano's mind for the town assessors to do the job better than they are doing it now, and it's another at the state level. What are state lawmakers telling you when you raise these complaints?
They shake their head. They really do not know what to do about high taxes. Or if they know what to do, politically they're not willing to attempt it.
Both major parties?
Both. That's my feeling.
Does that disappoint you?
Yeah, it disappoints me. But some of the things have caught their attention. This idea of not being able to vote. That's very surprising. The one legislator that I talked to didn't even know it. Let me give you another small one that really is in my craw. If you miss your tax payment by one day, they charge you a 2% penalty. Now, 2% penalty on an annualized basis is 24% interest. I mean, that's just a ridiculous fine or penalty for not being able to make the payments on time. So there's a lot of little things like that that the state legislators could attack. But the big problem about the high level of taxes, I see nothing.
All right, back to...
Let me tell you, I told you about Florida. Florida has more people than New York. The state budget in Florida is half of New York's. It's under $80 billion, and New York's is around $160 billion. Sales tax in Florida, 6%. Real estate taxes, 1 to 1.25% of market value. Here they're 2.5 to 4.
Chris on Twitter says, what's the difference between a $200,000 home in Columbus versus one in Rochester? I bet we get a lot more house for our buck. That's a common comment that I hear from people who say, look, taxes may be higher here. Boy, you get a lot of home for your dollars.
Yeah, I would dispute that right away, because the higher the tax load on your burden of making your monthly mortgage payment, the lower the price you can pay for a house. In other words, if the taxes are higher, it keeps your house value down, not up.
All right, let me go to Webster. This is Jan. I'm with Tom Galisano. Go ahead, Jan.
Yes, I'd like to echo what the previous caller said about the inappropriateness of the market values and what Mr. Gonzalez said as well. For example, 5 times, I believe, we've appealed the assessment on my particular property, which is a primary residence, because we're forced to have flood insurance by banking and mortgage rules, but that's not taken into the account for the value of the property. Flood insurance is now approaching $2,000 a year, which certainly makes any comparable to my house be much more valuable if you don't take into account that premium needs to be paid. And there, unless you are willing to argue it through every time, it won't be taken into account. And I find that to be a very inelastic system. Somehow they've got to be able to talk with property owners and be fair. I mean, I think we're talking about fairness here. It's kind of like the geese. The geese aren't going to go away. The flood insurance isn't going to go away. But that influences what somebody's going to be willing to pay. So that's what I have to say.
All right, Jan, thanks for the phone call. Tom, what do you think?
Well, I think she's right on. It's a perilous process to appeal these assessments, and people are not very successful at it, and it's time-consuming. And if they decide to go the legal route, it's very, very expensive.
What would it take to open it up beyond one day in May? Could local towns open their own windows, or is that a state issue, Tom?
I think it's determined by the state.
So that's really an issue that lawmakers...
They could change that.
They could change that.
Yeah, offer a variety of days for people that are out of town on the one specific day. They don't have a chance. But if they had multiple days, I think... And to give the people more of an opportunity. And also, the people that are making the final decision on the assessment should have nothing to do with the town government.
Why is that?
Because the town...
Too much incentivized for the town to crank up the assessment?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Now, assessors or people involved in this system may hear you say, look, our taxes are so exact everywhere else, and they're poorly done here. The assessment rarely reflects what an actual sale price would be. But maybe they'll say, look, sales tax is exact because that's easy. You put a number on a dollar, a percentage. It's easy to do that. Assessments on home are different because markets are fluid. The economies change. Trends change. And they're doing the best that they can. Do you think that they're doing a poor job because they are poorly trained, because they're poorly staffed, or there's something more nefarious here because they're trying to kind of get more from homeowners?
Well, there's no question that home values fluctuate.
Sure.
Over time, both up and down. Secondly, the assessors that I've met, I don't know how much professional training they've had. I would guess not that much.
You're not impressed?
I'm not impressed. Third, they don't even go inside the house. So how can you make a determination of an assessment in general situations unless there's an appeal? They don't even look at the house inside. So how can the thing be accurate? And I gave you the survey information earlier. 80% of them are not within 10%, up or down. That's a ridiculous system.
But Chris on Twitter says property values are primarily based on the plot of land, not the improvements to the property.
That may be true on Candego Lake, but it's not true in normal urban residences.
All right, I want to get back to your phone calls. Richard in Rochester next. Go ahead, Richard.
Well, Mr. Galassano, your answer to the comment about very low home prices in Rochester compared to the other cities with lower tax bills being compensated for by the fact that prices have been reduced because of our high taxes, that's not true. They're almost an order of magnitude differently. When you look at the New York Times real estate section and you see Rochester prices compared to these other cities, you're talking about our prices are one-third, one-half, one-quarter what home prices are elsewhere. Sure, those are reduced a little bit by the fact that we have taxes, but that accounts for what, 15-20% of the monthly cost to a homeowner? Those two things are totally out of proportion to each other. Your answer really is not true. The fact remains that our public works department and school systems have the same bills as any city in any developed state. Oh. And that's a constant. And therefore, the taxes have to pay for it the same as here, as Virginia or Florida or San Francisco or anywhere else.
All right, Richard,
but the home prices are a bargain, and the total cost to Rochester homeowners is much, much less than elsewhere.
All right, Richard, thanks for the phone call. Go ahead.
Okay, Rich, let me start with, first of all, you sound like a government employee, which is not bad. I think it's good. Government employees are very important. But let me tell you, start looking at the spending per student in our school systems across the state and compare it to other states. The city of Rochester, for example, spends over $31,000 a year per student. We pay for that with our real estate taxes and with our state income taxes.
Why do you think we do that in Rochester?
Why do we do that in Rochester?
Yeah, why do we spend that much per student?
I really don't know why, other than that we have very aggressive union representation. And I think they've done a lot to drive it up. And I think also our governments have a tendency when they can't solve a problem to throw more money at it.
But don't you think it's because there's higher levels of poverty and more need for families, single-parent households, students who are in real trouble?
I don't think you'll find much of that cost has to do with poverty. I think it has to do with administration.
Students in Rochester?
But most of the $31,000 doesn't have to do with poverty. What it has to do with is the cost of teachers, the cost of administration, and so on and so forth.
You blame the overhead, the employees, the union.
We spend more than any other, you know, general area across the country, and we're certainly not getting any results for it.
But Richard is really making the case that we do get more for our money here.
I don't know where. I'd like to know where. I mean, I live in another part of the country. For example, Canandaigua Lake, I pay $132,000, $90,000 school taxes. I have no water. I have no gas. I have to, no sewers, and I have to get my water out of the lake. And with my garbage, I have to take it to a town dump, and pay for by bag for taking my garbage. So I get nothing.
Bill in Pittsford says, what if you had dogs patrol the land for the geese?
I have dogs, and when we're down at the house, the dogs do pretty good, along with our help in chasing the geese off. But the problem is, we don't live down there. We're only there on weekends, and not all weekends. So consequently, the geese have the property available to them all the time. So, and then, even if I was successful in chasing the geese off with dogs, they just go to my neighbors.
Okay, so this is where Barbara says two things. She writes to us and says she lives in Fairport. She says, as far as assessments go, I did go to the assessment meeting. I did not find it intimidating. My assessment was incorrect. I made my case. My assessment was lowered. And she says, what does Mr. Golisano want to do? Have all the geese killed?
No, and I don't want anything to do with, but there are a lot of things that that the government can do with the geese. For example, they are protected species. Now, I don't know if that's necessary. Maybe it was necessary at one time. There's very limited hunting access to the geese population. You can get a special permit to shoot geese. I'm not interested in doing that, but I think they allow you to shoot like five a week or something like that. It's not going to even make a dent in the problem.
So
there's something that could be done about their egg laying, okay? But it takes professionals and a community effort to do something about that.
I mean, if I were geese, for sure I would be going to your property. You're rarely there. I would be there all the time.
We got a beautiful green lawn.
I would tell all the other geese I knew that is where the party is.
That's what's happened.
That is what has happened. Tom Golisano is my guest. We're going to get our only break of the hour. Our phone lines are filled up with people who want to share their assessment stories, which, you know, is part of what Tom wanted to talk about today. And this is his goal in changing the assessment system. He says it's not about his property. It's about the system that impacts all of us. So you want to continue with your comments? We'll continue them for the rest of the hour. Tom Golisano, my guest right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, three of the four candidates for mayor of Rochester will join us in studio to debate the issues. Incumbent Lovely Warren declined our request, but the others said yes, and they will be here in studio to debate. Then in our second hour, is there someone in your work life or your personal life with whom you just can't agree or get along with? How do you change that? How do you break down barriers? We'll discuss it. Talk to you Friday. If you're just joining us here on Connections, my guest is Tom Golisano, Paychecks founder and local philanthropist, who is challenging his tax assessment bill for his home on Canandaigua Lake. And Tom wanted to come on the program this week not to talk about the geese on his property, even though he knew he would be asked questions about that. But he says it's the assessment system itself that is broken. He's done his own kind of survey and finds, in his view and from what he has found in his own research, only about 20% of properties are assessed within 10% of what they sell for. So in other words, 80% are way off, some too high, some too low. So he says that's a big, big problem. It's not accurate to begin with. He doesn't like the fact that that you only really have a short window on one day a year in May to challenge your assessment. And most people don't have his resources to hire lawyers to really fight it extensively. So he'd like to see a lot of parts of the system change. He'd also like to be able to vote. Tom moved to Florida, but he's got a property here. He cannot vote here. He wants to see that change. Do you have any expectation that has a prayer to change, Tom?
I think when you look into a legislator's face, which I have done, and I've told them that, you know, I pay a lot of taxes in this community, but I'm not allowed to vote on local elections. I'm not talking about presidential elections or even state legislatures. I'm talking about local budget referendums. I could be a taxpayer in a community, but I can't vote on the budget itself. And I think that's a real travesty.
A lot of phone calls to work through. People want to talk about this issue. Bob in Honeyway Falls next. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, good afternoon. I have to agree. I know a lot of friends that have moved out of state, and what we pay in a month, they pay in a year for property taxes. And we're not receiving anything that they aren't. So I understand a lot of our tax revenue, however, gets kind of routed to New York City. And I'm wondering if Mr. Galassano happens to know what percentage of that is, and if that's one of the drivers behind why our property taxes are so high.
I'm afraid I can't accurately answer that question. I have heard reports saying that we get more value from New York City than we give to them. I don't know if it's true or not. It's entirely speculation. But I do know one thing, and I think I mentioned it earlier. In the case of the Naples School District, the Naples School District doesn't spend any more money per student per year than most districts that are in their neighborhood. But with all the high assessments, the great beneficiary to this is the state of New York. The state of New York, because of the high assessments in the Canandaigua area, give far less state aid per student than they do in other districts. So I can't fault the Naples School District, but the state certainly has a real advantage and has taken advantage of it, in my opinion, by not equalizing the state aid as much as they should.
Tim in Pittsford says, he says, not sure what Richard was talking about as far as taxes being 20% of our total monthly bill. Tim says, my example is my family's monthly mortgage payment. Our actual mortgage payment is $760 a month. Our property and school taxes per month, $910 per month. We are not rich, but we will be leaving the state at some point because of the taxes. That is Tim in Pittsford.
You can't tell me that the ratio of those real estate taxes to his mortgage payment are not creating an environment where your housing value goes up. It certainly, in my opinion, keeps it down. When people's monthly payment, so much of it has to go for taxes, certainly they can't afford to buy more house. So it will keep values down.
Robert in Fairport, next on the phone with Tom Galassano. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Interesting topic. If you go back to 1987, Peter McWalters and Adam Urbanski got together and raised teacher salaries by 40.3% over 3 years.
I remember that exactly.
And I'm just curious to what degree this has planned things. There's another very interesting article, interestingly enough, on the WXXI website that's undated, by the way. It says that 300-plus Rochester City School District employees earn six figures a year versus 67 in Buffalo. And according to the article, Urbanski says 13 of them are employed as teachers. The rest are God knows what. But I was wondering to what degree this has driven our taxes into the stratosphere.
Well, there's no question these factors. The last time I looked at the Rochester City School District budget, they were spending $31,000 per year per student. The teacher-pupil ratio, now I understand librarians and so forth are counted in this, was about 9-1. Also, they had a lot of paid full-time teacher's aides in the district that weren't included in the teacher's cost. But when you add it up, it's $31,000 no matter how you slice it, and we're just not getting the value for it. But we continue to have to carry the financial load.
Robert, you want to follow up there?
The Rochester City School District is the worst big city school district in the entire state. We're paying a huge premium for it. That salary increase was put through to supposedly close the performance gap and deliver high value to taxpayers. It has been an utter failure, needs to be unwound.
I remember that with Peter McWalter and Adam Urbanski. Their concept was, let's really raise teacher salaries and then we can get the best of the best to come to our school district. Well, what happened is they raised all the teachers' salaries, but then there was no turnover in teachers. So they weren't able to hire anybody because they didn't have openings. And with the tenure laws, you can understand why they couldn't have any openings. So it was a real farce from day one.
30 years ago, and that's not something that I've got all the data for at the tip of my fingers, but that might be worth revisiting. So thank you for that, Robert and Tom. I will dig into that separately. That's something worth revisiting 30 years later. We're talking to Tom Galassano. Every phone line's filled up. People want to talk assessments. You've touched a little bit of a nerve. And before I continue, I want to mention that tonight on WXXI, we've got continued coverage of the overdose epidemic. Our colleague Helen Biandutti-Hofer has personal stories of people in recovery, talking to those who are here to help as well. Don't miss our continuing coverage of opioids, heroin, and the overdose epidemic. Tonight, 8 o'clock on WXXI TV. That's 21.1. and channel 11 on cable, and catch it on demand, of course, WXXINews.org. Helena's doing outstanding work there, as are all of our colleagues, Second Opinion and so many other sources. So that's tonight.
Evan, before I take the next call, I want to say something.
Yeah.
All you people calling in and all you people listening, why don't we ask the media to pay more attention to this issue? I mean, there should be public forums on this situation because of the overwhelming impact it has on our residents and our taxpayers. But the media, as well as the legislators, don't seem to be too interested in it. Fortunately, Evan said yes to me coming on the program, and I appreciate it. But we got to start asking questions and start demanding answers.
Do you think that there is any likely change coming on this issue? I mean, as you said, you think that that $90,000 outstanding bill you have for Naples, you think this is all going to get wrapped up before that goes too far down the road. But what does that mean?
Well, what it means is the laws are all against me. Okay? I'm going to pay a pretty severe fine, but I'm willing to do it because the issue is so big. And quite frankly, I'm going to be spending a lot more on this program, on this issue, than just the fines from the school district, because we're creating websites. We're starting to design some statewide advertising about the issue. So the fine is sort of meaningless to me compared to what else we're going to be doing.
And that's all coming in the coming weeks here?
Hopefully, yes.
All right, so look for statewide advertising, maybe public forums. We'll see.
Hopefully. We've got to get the media on this.
Well, look at every phone line filled up. Bob, I'm going to take as many as we can. Bob in Rochester. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, hi. This is about voting issue. My brother, my sister, and I jointly own property in the Adirondacks. My sister and I live here in Rochester, my brother in Maryland. And so the question becomes, you want to be able to vote where you own property, but how would we vote as there are three of us? Would we each get a vote? Would we get a third of a vote? And if it's a third of a vote, how do you manage that?
The way it works now is if you have, for example, a husband and wife and three children over 21 years of age, they get five votes on that budget referendum. So in your situation, if you were all part owners, I would assume you'd each get a vote. Or if you lived in the property, some part of the year, you would each get a vote, because that's what happens with an average family household. They could get up to 10. If there are eight children, they could have 10 votes.
You're voting in the area that you live. I mean, throughout American history, you've never been able to vote twice.
No. I'm talking about...
I get what you're saying.
No, but you got the facts wrong, Bob. I live in Mendon. That's where my household is, in Rochester. I'm talking about Canandaigua Lake property. I cannot vote.
No, I get that, but I thought your actual residence, though, was Florida.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So I can't vote in Mendon, and I can't vote in South Bristol.
Right.
Even though I pay a lot of money in taxes.
People who live here and have property in Florida can't vote there either.
Say that again.
It equals out.
Bob is saying people who live in Rochester but own property in Florida can't vote in Florida.
That's correct.
And they should be able to vote in Florida too?
I think if they're homeowners, if they own real estate, yes.
All right, so let me pursue the line of questioning Bob was on here a little bit. You've got property in Mendon, Canandaigua Lake, Florida. Should you have local voting rights in all three?
If I'm a taxpayer, yes.
Okay. And when it comes to someone living here but having property, what if they have property in five other states? They should be able to vote everywhere they've got property.
I would think so.
Now, what would you say? What if I were your neighbor and I would say, look, I live here year-round. You're here 8 weekends a year. Your vote shouldn't cancel out mine. You're barely here. What would you say to that?
I pay the same amount of taxes relative that you do. Why shouldn't I have a vote?
So we shall see on that one.
Remember that, Patriot? Taxation without representation is tyranny. We started a revolution over that theorem.
All right, Steve in Webster, next up. Go ahead, Steve.
I was just going to comment. One thing that I think we're missing as far as how much taxes we pay in Monroe County or even upstate New York in the snow belt. I grew up in the South, and I don't know what the budget was down there. We had no snow plows, you know. I don't know what we spend on removing snow, keeping the roads moving, and we could have 10 inches of snow and keep going like it's just another day. And that's got to factor into how much more taxes you might pay here than, say, Columbus. Mr. Galassano said something about the Columbus's comparable to us, but that's got to play into the mix somewhere. And I don't think it necessarily makes up for the total amount more we pay, but I definitely think we got to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
And then I had one other question, but...
Okay, so real briefly, so about 100 inches of snow a year here, Columbus gets, I'm going to guess, 25, I don't know. So does that play into the discrepancy? And is that...
I think it's insignificant.
Okay, so you don't think that's a factor?
No. If you look into the budgets, I think you're going to find the cost of education, the cost of welfare, and Medicaid are the biggest ones.
Steve, you want to follow up with something else you said? Go ahead.
I don't know if anybody has touched on this, but what is the other, what is there a solution to this other than taxing based on the value of the real estate? I mean, is there a more equitable way to do it? Just take everybody's square footage and say everybody pays $10 per square foot per year? Or,
well, there's no question. There's no question. The more we can do with the assessment training and process, the better off we are. The other thing to consider, you know, real estate taxes came into existence when budgets were low and the taxes weren't very much, but they've really grown tremendously in the last 15, 20 years. Maybe we ought to start looking at alternate forms of taxation that are more equitable.
As an example?
Income tax. Now everybody's going to shudder. No, I don't want to have an income tax in Monroe County if we still got the real estate taxes, but there may be a substitute there or a possible potential partial substitute of income taxes. Think of the retired people that own a $200,000 home, got to pay $7,000 in real estate taxes, okay, and their income is very limited. They are the ones that are really hurt, and that, you know, those are the ones that are moving. A lot of them are moving to Florida. They're moving away from their children and their grandchildren. It's not fun to be in that situation.
All right, Barbara in Brighton, next up with Tom Golisano. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hi there. I have some agreements and some disagreements. I have a 91-year-old friend who successfully twice over the past, I'd say 5 or 6 years, challenged her taxes. And it did take a little bit of, you know, doing homework and looking up stuff. But and she's pretty sharp. But, you know, she managed to do it, and she won in both cases. She lives in Brighton. And so I would just say... I feel as though Mr. Golisano is making it sound like it's, you know, this huge lifetime job, and it isn't. So people could try to do that and be probably successful.
I wish everybody would try it.
Yeah, I think people can be successful. As far as schools and the media, that annoys me because those are traditional whipping groups for Republicans like Mr. Golisano. And, you know, part of me says, why am I listening to you who left town to avoid paying taxes, which makes it worse on the rest of us. And as far as the schools go, if you look into the details, instead of just dealing with overall hits, many of the places are improving. And, of course, it's going to be a lifetime job. But here's the deal. The reason when you say it's a terrible system, this, that, and the other, of course it is, because this town over the centuries has refused to deal with the issues that caused the problems in the schools in the first place. It's easy to blame the media for not talking about it, and P.S., that's our job to bring it up, not the media. And secondly, it's easy to dump everything on teachers. None of you have ever been in a classroom where, you know, 50 or 60 new people show up every hour on your job with different problems and personalities. So until you do that for 30 years, don't be dumping on the teachers. And I'm not one. As far as...
Is this a speech or do you have a question?
Yes. Well, I don't. I'm just telling you that it's annoying to hear on your worst day, you would be better off than the rest of us. So as far as whining about not about high taxes, wah, wah, wah.
All right, Barbara, thank you.
Okay, Barbara, I'm going to respond to that. If this was such a great atmosphere, why isn't the state growing in population? Why are more people leaving than coming? If it wasn't for the immigration into New York City, New York State would be losing population every single year. Now, why is that? Because people are finding out there are better places to live where their government isn't as obtrusive and doesn't spend as much money. You're not being realistic. I understand what teachers, I think I realize, understand what teachers have to go through. But the fact of the matter is, we're driving people out of this state. Look at the growth of some of the states and other parts of the country. It makes us, we should be embarrassed. So let's look at the final result. Are more people coming than going? More people are going than coming in New York State.
Well, we're down to our last 30 seconds. Just want to remind you, Tom Golisano here today, not just talking about his own tax assessments, but the system. And he says in the coming weeks, you will likely see some advertising statewide about this issue. Yeah?
Please, yes. That's your plan. Yep. As well as developing a website where people can interact with us and join forces with us.
Okay. Well, we have had phone calls filled up all five lines all hour long, all kinds of emails and on all sides of this. But there's going to be a lot of interest, and we'll be following it. And I hope
Can we keep going? I've
got to go here in a minute here.
Oh, I asked Evan if we can keep going. I don't have to leave.
Will you come back?
Yeah, sure, I'll come back.
Well, you've certainly touched a nerve, and whether it's people like Barbara who oppose this or many people who've called and shared their own tax assessment issues, we will be following this with Tom Golisano. And every time Tom comes in, he says, bring whatever questions you want. I always appreciate that. Thank you for the time here, and I do hope to see you soon.
I enjoyed it. Thanks again.
Tom Golisano, our guest for the hour right here. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. If you didn't get through, again, look for a website and much more from Tom to come on this issue. He says it's the most aggressive he's ever been on the tax assessment issue, and there's a lot more to come, and I suspect we'll have him back on the program sometime soon to discuss it more. Have a great afternoon, and we're right back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.